Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Was that a good belch?
Well, my mic was off, right?
Yeah, it was off, but you always pick on me for fiddling with knobs and such, and yet,
'cause you're a knob fiddler.
Yes, and you're the one that's sitting here belching and getting it all out before the show, so to speak.
'Cause I'm a professional. I try to get it out before the show. I'm a professional.
How many times have you burped into that microphone in the course of this show?
I don't know, 100?
And who knows? Maybe there's somebody out there with a burp fetish. And if they have a burp fetish, where can they go to explore burp fetish material?
I don't know.
Okay, well, maybe...
Normal fetish material would be adamandeve.com. I don't know about that specific one.
I'm sure they've got something out there.
You do the promo. I'm going to get something to drink.
Okay.
So I can get some gas to burp with.
Okay, there you go. If you go to adamandeve.com, and as you're checking out, use the promo code STATIC, you get a few things. Number one, you get 50% off of one item. You get 3 free DVDs, free shipping in the United States, and a free mystery gift so mysterious, we don't know what it is. That's what makes it a mystery gift. Plus, you get a nice, warm, comfy feeling knowing that you're helping Josh and I keep the lights on and keep STATIC going. To piggyback on that one, too, if you go to 1201beyond.com, we have some links to some suggested stuff at Amazon, good stuff that we both recommend. And if you use those links to purchase at Amazon, we get just a little bit of a kickback. Doesn't cost you a penny more.
Something else that even you're not aware of yet.
Sure.
At 1201beyond.com, if you go to the Beyond Midnights with ad blocker off, if you guys use Riff Tracks, use the Riff Tracks links that are on my webpage. I am now a Riff Tracks affiliate as well.
Excellent. Excellent. And I love those guys. Riff Tracks, Cinematic Titanic, the whole bunch of them.
So I'm just saying, we figured it came from me on Midnight about movies,
mm-hmm.
Riff Tracks. It just seemed to fit. And Cassandra put that all together. She's awesome.
Sure. Now, last week we discussed the 1970s in all of its polarizing glory.
And this week we will be looking at the 1980s. Now, to be fair, we will be glossing over certain things, such as the rise of the home computer was in the 80s, but we're doing a whole computer series, so
we'll be doing a tech retrospective. And
so I'll say right now is the rise of the home computer was the 80s. We'll deal with the rest of that later.
Exactly.
And then the movies, Brad and I dealt with it on a Radiodrome, so
right.
We're not going to spend a lot of time on the movies.
Now there's a couple of events in 1980 that really set off the decade and kind of shaped...
The death of the 70s,
well,
technically.
The death of the 70s, and I'm sure you've got a couple of things in mind. I have a couple in mind. First off, on the political front, we put an actor in the White House.
Ronald Reagan.
Well, yes, Ronald Reagan and the rise of Reaganomics and all
which
that
does
he
not
stood
work.
For. And it was really the start of the trickle-down economics.
Which doesn't work.
And the other thing actually happened in sports, because in 1980...
Miracle on Ice shit.
Yeah. There are a lot of people that see that. I mean, coming out of the 70s, we had the gas shortages. We had a really, really shitty political scene.
The Cold War was, and I know what an oxymoron I'm about to say, was really heating up.
Yeah, I mean, the Cold War was going strong at the end of the 70s. We didn't quite have the nuclear scare that we did of the 50s and 60s, but at the end of the 70s, at the very dawn of the 80s, America economically...
The evil empire was rising.
Yes, the evil empire was rising, and at least over here, it looked like the Soviet Union was ready to pounce. They were doing better economically, as far as we knew.
Yeah, they weren't. That was a smokescreen of shadow of duranium shadows.
Right, but as far as we knew, they were winning the nuclear race. They still had a space program, and ours had kind of petered out at this point. You know, we had Viking and a couple other things, and the first Mars lander, and
our space program would totally blow up with Challenger. Really.
Too soon.
Fuck you.
Too soon. especially since I live just a few blocks from Krista McAuliffe Park and Challenger Road. And
hey, do you know how they knew Krista McAuliffe had great hair? They found her head and shoulders on the beach.
So anyway, the 70s, at the end of the 70s, America was in the shitter. And as far as we knew, you know, the Soviet Union was ready to pounce. They were kicking our ass. And the Olympics happened. And this spunky little American team.
In hockey.
Was the one thing that we could really rally around. I mean, we had no hope going in.
It was the birth, the fans of that were the birth of the USA, yes. USA yes. chant, yes. which is just ridiculous jingoistic bullshit.
But. Right, but it was necessary at the time. I mean, it was the one little spark of hope in 1980 that everybody could kind of rally around.
Except the Russians.
Well, fuck them. Goddamn Soviet Reds. They were doing fine. They had all those nuclear missiles.
Aimed at us.
Everybody was either an artist or a ballet dancer, and they were all amazingly... There was
vodka for everybody.
There was vodka for everybody. Everybody, you know...
And they loved Tetris.
The United States saw the Soviet Union at this time as... What a lot of people, you know, you hear the rhetoric of, in America, the streets are paved with gold. It is the land of opportunity. Well, in 1980, it wasn't. It was in the shitter. And a lot of people looked at the Soviet Union going, they've got it really good over there, at least as far as we knew. Yes, there was a giant iron curtain in the way. And, you know, the leaders were going, no, never mind the man behind the iron curtain. We're doing great. And... that's what we thought. So this miracle on ice happened where the United States hockey team started winning, and eventually it came down to the final bout for gold between the Soviet Union and the Americans. And everybody knew that the Americans were going to lose, and they didn't.
Even the Americans knew
the Americans were going to lose. And they, you know, in the meantime, the Canadians are going, oh, come on. We had the chance. We're the freedom. Come on, we can, yay,
it's
Maple
hockey.
Leaf.
You know, we're fucking Canadian. Exactly. Just go together.
Exactly. And in the meantime, the Americans turn around and beat it. And really, that I think was the spark that turned the 80s optimistic. I know it sounds stupid and small to you, but really, stupid and small was something that the country was holding on to.
No, I see what you mean. I'm just. Miracle on Ice. I'm just sick of that shit. But there was also to deal with not politics, but social. I think not since the 60s race riots had there been as divisive of a decade when it came to race relations either. Because in the 1960s, you had all the race issues, right?
Right.
In the 1980s, you had incidents such as Tawna Brawny. The Tawna Brawny incident almost ignited a racial civil war in this country.
And for those that don't know what that incident was?
Tawna Brawny was a I think she was 12-year-old black girl in inner city New York, and she was found raped on a pile of garbage, and she claimed a white police officer did it. So, and the white police officer denied it, of course. So Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson are calling for his head, and then it's a cover-up by the NYPD and all this, and they're on all the talk shows, and they're talking about how this is just further evidence of how black people are dehumanized by whites, and they're stirring up a white race war. And it turned out Tawna's older brother did it, and she lied. And did Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson apologize?
Not at all.
They just kind of... moving on to the next thing. And they left it go. And that the Tawna Brawny incident was almost the spark that ignited the fuse of racial tensions in America. Because you had the inner cities getting worse. You had the rise of rednecks, which, you know, was just that 50s, you know, ain't gonna be no niggers in my neighborhood kind of attitude. And just it was a tough time between black and white.
Well, yeah.
Let alone Asian and, you know, everybody else that was kind of just going, just kind of leave us out of it when you two come to blows, huh?
I mean, it was 1980, 81 that you saw a sharp rise and really the biggest and most powerful Ku Klux Klan that you had seen since the turn of the century.
Yeah, the Klan picked up. The neo-Nazi movement really picked up. Technically, starting in the 70s with the when the Turner Diaries was... Remember we brought up the conspiracy nuts? The Turner Diaries was a serialized chapter story that was passed around in photocopies between all these crazies, and that really started kicking up what we think of as the modern neo-Nazi movement in the 80s. So it was a tough time. And then the whole banger culture that came about in Reich 85 in the inner city sure as hell didn't help. They hated white folks as much as white folks hated them.
Well, you had you know, the KKK and the Turner Diaries followers turning against the inner city, and you saw it was in the 80s that you saw the rise of the Bloods and the Crips.
Yeah.
And,
that whole banger culture.
Yeah, they started, and I realized it's kind of funny, but, you know, when they started, they were a specifically black gang, both of them. The Bloods and the Crips were both black gangs. They didn't really allow white people in. Maybe an Hispanic or, you know, here and there.
Maybe a African American.
Yeah, you know, but you didn't see white people in those gangs. And that was in response to the rise of the Klan that really came about, and the rise of the neo-Nazis that came about in the 80s.
Yeah, and then that leads us into our next social issue, the rise of, we brought it up last week, cocaine, and its bastard stepchild, crack.
See, the 1980s was when, in the 50s, the drug culture was goofy, and it was fringe, and it was out there. And yes, there were things like reefer madness and stuff like that to try and combat it. In the 60s, it was seen as a natural thing to do and a way to expand the mind. And in the 70s, it was a way to, during the sexual revolution, it was a way to loosen the legs,
and to connect with other human beings.
In the
80s, it was to escape reality.
It was to escape reality, and it was the first time that you really saw the government on a hold. This was the beginning of the war on drugs.
Well, oh, yeah.
Maybe not the beginning, but it was definitely when it ramped up, it was the
amping up of the war on drugs. You know, let's put it this way. Miami Vice would not, the TV show could not have happened in the 70s because the problem was not as bad as the way it got by 84.
Exactly. And this was when we saw Nancy Reagan really take the reins of this.
Just Say No.
And I don't know if you remember the Just Say No rallies.
I do.
Or if you ever attended one.
I didn't attend any, but I do remember seeing them on the news and flyers and shit like that for them.
The ones that I attended in elementary school were compulsory.
Really?
Yeah. You had to go. And I think, not here, but at my mom's house, I think I've got a green Just Say No t-shirt still. So, but yeah, this was when drugs really turned to something bad. And if you were doing drugs, and if you were involved in cocaine, and God forbid crack, because if you're black, you're involved with crack. And that's just the way it was. White people didn't do crack. It was a black thing. And, you know, if you were involved in that, you were doing it to escape reality. You were doing it to escape this shitty world that we were in because you weren't man enough to deal with it. Or on the feminist, you know, you weren't a strong enough woman to deal with it.
Well, and then the natural outcome of that was what happened in 1984. With the gay cancer.
Yes.
And no, this, by the way, this whole episode's not going to be a downer like this. We'll talk about good shit too.
Yes.
We're just getting the bad shit out of the way. But the gay cancer that we know of as AIDS for almost a full year was just thought of as the gay cancer. It was this cancer that only gay guys, at this point, just gay guys were the only ones getting it, were contracting, and they couldn't figure it out. They didn't know how to treat it. They didn't know where it came from. They didn't know how to stop it, which also caused the rampant insanity about you can get it from sharing a coffee cup with a gay person, from sitting on the same toilet seat. Mm-hmm. All this finally got a human face with Ryan White.
Yes.
Ryan White was a middle schooler who got AIDS through a blood transfusion. That's what put this human face to what AIDS was.
Children's Hospital of Indianapolis, Indiana, by the way.
And otherwise, and that's the first time people started to go, maybe this isn't just a gay thing. Because I know a lot of people in my personal life that were like, so what? Fags are getting killed. This is God's redemption. This is God's punishment for them being fags. This is what they get.
Well, if we talk about the media side, there was a very interesting thing in the middle of the country. You didn't see this on the coasts too much, but in the middle of the country, you saw the rise of Pat Robertson and his ilk. The 700 Club,
the
CBN,
televangelist.
The televangelist, Oral Roberts locking himself in a tower until he raised $2 million.
Which one was the one that God will strike me dead if I don't?
Oral Roberts.
That was Oral.
Okay. That was Roberts.
I get, honestly, as racist as this sounds, they all look alike to me. I get so many of them confused.
Oral Roberts was the God will strike me down. Pat Robertson is the politically active God's going to strike fags down. And then you have Peter Popov, which is God will strike you down unless you drink this water. and then you had people like Bakers.
Yep.
Jim and Tammy. Yeah, Jim and Tammy. This was the rise of that. It was down-home country values of one man, one woman, one God, one country. And that was the message that they preached, and it really came out of the middle of the country.
It did. But it also, and this is the part that sickens me, it hit so many people. I mean, how did so many people fall for their bullshit? I mean, you and I lived through this. We saw this shit when it was new. And I, looking back at this old footage, I can't believe people didn't go, this is an obvious snake oil salesman. How did you fall for this?
It's because it comes back exactly to...
Were they just telling you the platitudes you wanted to hear?
It comes back to the Miracle on Ice. They offered one thing that very little else in the country offered until about 1984, 1985. Hope.
But they were such transparent shysters.
Didn't matter. They offered hope. If you're damned thirsty and I've got a bottle of salt water, you go, well, it's still water.
But, I mean, okay, you it didn't seem suspicious at all that God wants me to live in a $3 million home and drive a Rolls Royce. That is God's will towards me, and you have to make that happen.
And I refer.
Did I just go into my preacher voice there? What the shit was that? I don't know what that. I was channeling.
You did quite well, actually. You had the hand motions down. You were going good. I was afraid you were going to lean forward and go, you are healed. But nonetheless, they were offering hope.
I give you hair.
Ow. Damn it, Josh.
Well, hey. If you actually start growing hair, that'll be really ironic, won't it?
Ow, didn't work. Nonetheless, they offered hope, regardless of how shitty and how transparent it is. And I refer back to P.T. Barnum. There's a sucker born every minute.
There was a lot of American suckers.
There are a lot of American suckers. We still have televangelists.
Yeah, but they don't have nearly the sway that they did in the 80s.
This is true. This is true. But, man, Benny Hinn, Peter Popov, check them out. Late night TV. They're still rich as fuck.
But, okay.
Almost makes me think I should get into that.
The Church of LITS.
Exactly. Or Stosten the Laddick.
You will all become Hadleyites. I will baptize you with my urine.
No. We'll start a duetic religion. Murrayans and the Hadleyites.
Nah, I'll end up killing you and just taking it all.
We'll be at war. Anyway.
But
yeah, you had the rise of the televangelist, and that's what the 80s tried to offer, and this is why we had so many suckers in the 80s, was that hope that, you know, this is a new decade. We're 20 years out from the, you know, hoverboards and flying cars.
But at the same time, yes, they were offering hope, and to show just what leeches they were, they did look at, like, the Cold War, that you could be nuked at any time. which also bled into the shopping,
yeah,
the credit cards, the Valley Girls. I might not be here next year. I might as well live it up now.
It was
this whole live for the moment, this YOLO shit. You might think, you know, people nowadays think that that started, oh, YOLO, it's a couple of years. No, that's in the 80s that, you know, that live fast, die young, and leave a good-looking corpse. That's exactly. an 80s saying that encapsulates the just the pure bullshit that was the 80s. The narcissism of the 80s.
You had the rise of the shopping mall. You remember the mall was... It wasn't just a place to go.
Gotta remember, at our age, I loved mall girls, man. Oh, mall girls were so... Oh, my God. Like, totally. And then wearing those half shirts. And, oh, my God, Scott.
I still do. I keep getting older, but they stay the same age. But it's creepy. But the mall, it wasn't just a place to go shop or just kind of hang out with your friends in the food court like it is now. It was a destination. They had concerts. They had movies. You had arcades. We've talked about arcades in the past. You had
the birth of the multiplex were usually in malls.
Exactly.
It's because you can't just show the new Chuck Norris movie because you're not going to get all the audience. You need to show the new Julia Roberts movie as well, and the Chuck Norris movie, and Return of the Jedi, and the new Friday the 13th movie. You've got to cater to everybody, so we got to put like 5 or 6 theaters in this one theater. That I might be wrong that it was the birth of the multiplex. First time I ever saw one was in a mall.
Yeah, and that's... and
I did it again. I hit my elbow again. Fucking Christ.
You're going to have to move over from that thing.
God damn it.
But yeah, it came out of the Galleria that was out. It was a California thing.
Yeah, that was actually, I think that was the mall where Fast Times was shot because you see the Galleria in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
But yeah, the mall was a destination, and it was the social destination of everybody. You didn't just have the mall girls that were there to see the Tiffany concert or the Debbie Gibson concert that was there. You had that. You also had the punks that were left over. They may have been in the dark corners of the mall or hanging out in the arcade.
Punk at that point, and we'll get into music in a little bit. Punk at that point had stopped actually being about something
right.
and became a fashion thing.
Right.
It wasn't real punk anymore for the most part.
Right.
There was, I mean, this is also when you had the rise of the Dead Kennedys and, you know, Bad Religion and some of the real ones that were really trying to do something different. But your average guy on the street with a big fucking spiked mohawk and a leather jacket, he was doing it because he thought he looked cool.
Exactly.
Not because he believed in what that said about him.
Exactly. Yeah. And this really, those punks were the ones that were the birth of the Hot Topic goth. But, you know, the mall was a destination. And you even had adults there. The adults, you know, they had plenty of things for adults
mall
to do. Mall walking was huge. And you had the coffee shop that would open up early for the mall walkers. And this wasn't, I mean, now we kind of laugh at mall walkers because they're all ancient and...
But they started back in the 80s, man.
But they started back in the 80s, and they were of all ages. You had 20-year-olds going and power walking through the mall so that they could do some window shopping while they got their exercise.
I know this is the 70s, but since we're talking about malls, Dawn of the Dead was a statement. Yeah. It was right. When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the mall.
And you had America. Again, Cold War is heated up. We, instead of building bomb shelters like we did in the 50s and pretending that we were going to live through it, we had accepted that should World War III come about, we're dead. The entire Earth is dead.
Live it up now.
Yeah, live it up now. Spend.
Do the coke, fuck the chick, get it over with, you know, pre-AIDS, of course.
Of course.
But remember, I gotta say, you take over.
You go right ahead. Are you going to... Yeah, that's what I thought. Wipe that microphone off, would you? Thank you. Now,
but you know, you had the another thing was, remember Halley's Comet?
Oh yes,
when that came back, and to go into movies, that was a big. Remember all the not necessarily Halley's Comet, but the Comet horror movies that
Night
came out.
Night of the Comet.
You had Night of the Comet. Maximum Overdrive was caused by a comet. Life Force.
Oh, yeah.
And all that. You had all those movies that capitalized on basically the hoopy about about Halley's Comet coming back and all the media coverage, we can quick hammer out a cometish movie or something exactly. to do with a comet.
Exactly.
But you also had the rise in people legitimately getting into the space program and interest in that again that hadn't been for a long time
until
Challenger happened. I mean, all the jokes I made aside, Challenger was, no pun intended, the death of NASA, basically. They never really recovered after the media disaster that was.
Yeah, they tried, and then they lost another shuttle, and that was that.
Well, but see, it was also NASA's fault. Most people don't know the true story of what happened to the Challenger. It was NASA's fault. Because they were more interested in the TV ratings. Because this was, you had a teacher, you had a civilian going up. We were being covered live, carried in every school in America and Canada.
Yep.
Was watching this live. It was too cold that morning for the O-rings to fire properly. And they said, we can't reschedule. There's too much money thrown into the media behind this. We'll just cross our fingers.
Yep.
So it was because of the media that those seven people fucking died.
Yes. And
so
and
I don't feel bad for NASA and the fallout that happened because it was their goddamn fault.
But do you remember the launch and subsequent landing of Columbia?
Yes.
Now, the Columbia was the first space shuttle. It launched for the first time in 1981, I want to say. 81, 82, somewhere around there. But I remember the absolute haywire, batshit insane people went. I mean, here in Wisconsin, we have these cheesehead hats. You'll see them if you watch American football at all.
You can see them in Ninja the Mission Force, too.
Exactly. And you had people with that kind of foam shuttle hat going on. I remember they were selling mementos at my school. And the launch and subsequent landing of Columbia, the very first space shuttle, meant the U.S. had done it. We'd built this space airplane, basically. And pretty soon, there's going to be civilians. They're going to build a passenger version of one of these.
It's going to be like the beginning of 2001.
Exactly. And that's what that really what a lot of people thought that meant. And it kept going strong until Challenger, which when Challenger launched and then subsequently blew up, yeah, that was it. That was the death
America knell. Was done with the space program. Well, let's move from that into something we'll be bitching about, I'm sure, but a little less doomy, the music of the 1980s. Now, I don't like a lot of 80s music. I like some because I'm a metal fan, so you know I had the heavy metal and the thrash and some of the good punk.
Sure.
But to me, the 80s was a watered-down musical decade. Not only did you have the pop that was always there, but it just... I think the synthesizer coming down in price was the death of good music. Because for one thing, you saw these 70s punk bands go into that transition to become new wave bands.
Right.
And they called it growing as artists. And when you talk to them now, you know, in modern interviews, they go, nah, man, it was just easier and we were riding a fucking trend.
Basically.
Fuck that growing as artist shit. We saw this, no, is not selling anymore, but is getting radio play. It's all about selling out.
Yeah.
I think the guitar is the stupidest musical instrument ever invented. So your thoughts on 80s music?
I don't know. I mean, when it comes to 80s music, there's some that I like, there's some that I don't. And when it comes to new wave, there's some that I like and some that I don't. I think one thing that did happen was in the 80s was lyrics started mattering again.
That was there in the 70s too.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but you,
like we talked about with like the prog rock and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and that's kind of where my brain went in the 80s. In the 80s, I was really stuck in not the new wave, but the new age music deal because that's what my mom listened to. Things like Mannheim Steamroller and Jean-Michel Jarre. But
you also got to realize what a huge influence that music video played.
Oh, sure.
In this stuff. You know, Dead Kennedys were never going to get on MTV.
Oh, no.
But Tony Basil would.
Sure.
And so the music video, I mean, I think I heard Scott Ian of Anthrax say when it comes to MTV, but this, I think this goes for music video in general. But Scott Ian of Anthrax said, getting your video played on MTV is like getting 5,000 plays on the radio.
Yes.
You've just been exposed to so many more new people that your album is going to go, it's almost guaranteed to go gold by next week.
Oh, yes.
That's how important a music video was to this stuff, and MTV would not play at that point stuff like Anthrax, so you had to water your sound down to get MTV play. It wasn't even about radio play anymore. It was about MTV play.
And you got to remember, this all comes back to the mall, because the mall had, TVs were affordable in the 80s. More affordable than cable they ever
was,
had been.
Cable was relatively affordable.
Cable was relatively affordable and in most of the markets in the U.S. And so somebody who builds up a shopping mall goes, well, how do I get people in here just to hang out in the mall and then go shopping?
We'll have MTV on in the food court and stuff. And MTV is only carried in 30% of the country. Exactly. So this is something they can't get elsewhere.
Exactly. We'll have MTV on in the food court. Maybe, you know, you had the start of corporate video communications. You had some very enterprising mall owners and shop owners go, okay, well, so they have regular MTV outside. We're here at Banana Republic. We have a certain client that we're shooting for. They have a certain music that they like. Let's put together
a comp tape.
Let's put together a tape. And we'll just play the music for the people that we want. And that way we don't have any of the riffraff coming in, especially in high-end
stuff.
We don't
want those black people in Banana Republic.
Well, you know, thinking about it too, what really mattered in the 80s was high-end fashion. You had things like Fendi and Gucci and YSL and a bunch of others really take off. I mean, they'd always been there, but they had been out of reach. Now that you have Americans willing to go into debt, suddenly,
thanks to the credit card system.
Yeah. Suddenly, you know, Coco Chanel and Gucci and Fendi and all of these names that we see as mediocre fashions now because they've come down in price have a huge audience. I remember shopping with my uncle. And keep in mind, he's a neurosurgeon. He could afford it. But my aunt took me shopping at one point. I don't even remember where we were, somewhere in the southeast. And we walked into a Fendi outlet store. And she bought me one outfit that cost her $700. Pair of pants and a shirt, $700. But people were spending like that. And so you start seeing corporate media again. You know, we don't want the riffraff in our store, and we want it known that we don't want the riffraff in our store.
I think what you're talking about is the rise of yuppieism.
Yes. Yes. The yuppies came about. The
young
urban professionals.
Almost the antithesis of what a hippie was.
Exactly.
It's we are the mirror opposite of what a hippie is.
We are ultra capitalists. We are going to use the system.
We're ultra vain.
Yeah, we're ultra vain, ultra capitalists. Fuck the earth. We're going to use the system. And that's, and you know, you may say down with the man, we want to fucking be the man. And that's what Yuppie was about. In fact, if you can find a copy of it, there is a book called The Boomer Bible. And the one that I had a little cover as you move it. It was a hand going, gimme, gimme, gimme. And it was a parody of the Bible, but all about capitalism and really being a good little capitalist.
Why I think the 80s will always be symbolized, right or wrong, but will always be symbolized by that vapid, self-centered, completely out of touch model that
the country clubber. People,
Yeah, or the yuppie. I mean, you know, the vapid, self-centered little prick.
Yeah, but image was everything. Image was everything. You wanted
to tie this back into music. Look at you know, the image. It was all about how you looked. It was all about, look, you know, the big hair on the heavy metal guys. It was all about the hairstyles and the makeup on the Tiffany's or your flash in the pans there and all that. It was all about how you looked. And then when you got some, you know, fucking Crosby, Stills, and Nash motherfuckers coming out, nobody wanted to make a video for them because they're not visually appealing.
Right. And this was... It was an evolution, you know, in the 70s we had glam rock. This was an evolution of that into this new wave movement where, again, how you looked mattered more than how you sounded, frankly.
Yeah. That's the only way to explain Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Yeah. Or Bowie's look at the time.
Yeah, but he still had substance to the music.
Yeah, he did. He did. I'll give him that. But yeah, image was everything in the 80s. And people started, I mean, thanks to my family being a fortunate family, I was raised in that yuppie culture. I was raised
by ex-hippies.
I know. I was raised where, you know, my cousin had to have the right plaid skirt that looked just almost like the 50s, but not quite a little bit 80s.
I'm older, the one that just, you know, wants an Iron Maiden t-shirt and ripped jeans.
Yeah, and that hasn't changed.
Shut up.
At all.
I'm not wearing an Iron Maiden t-shirt. Shut up.
What t-shirt is that?
It's like a Halloween glow-in-the-dark one. Never mind.
Yeah, just... there you go. But yeah, you know, and you had to belong to the right country club. You had to hang around
Didn't allow blacks.
Which, of course not.
The only blacks in country clubs were carrying trays.
No, that's not true. Actually, in the 80s, we started to see a little bit of integration because...
Affirmative action laws?
No, not just affirmative action laws. In the inner cities, believe it or not, these gangs we spoke about, they're businesses. And hip-hop culture that rose out of these... Yeah. You started to see some success. I mean, yes, in the 80s, we had things like Public Enemy and NWA, and it was about, this is how shitty our life in the ghetto is. Get us the hell out. This is what the white man is doing to us. Get us the hell out. But at the same time, you started to see a rise of the black professional as well.
I've never understood a black Republican. It just seems like a contradiction in terms, doesn't it?
I've never understood a female Republican either, but they're out there.
Yeah, apparently they are. But that's the other thing we need to talk about is the rise of the Republican Party. I think they had more power in the 80s, you know, due to Reagan and then Bush won. I think the Republicans got the big head that they have now from the 1980s because they were bad in the 70s, but they were nothing like they were in the 80s.
But this was still the pre-family values Republican. This was still where Republicanism wasn't so much a value statement as it was an economic one. I mean, Reagan really was the last of the economic Republicans, of the true small government, for the most part, hands off the social laws, let the people decide that on a smaller scale, truly economic Republicans. It was with Bush 1 and especially Bush 2 that you really started to see the family values of the Republican Party come out. And when you had people like Pat Robertson and Oral Roberts and Peter Popov and all of those snake oil salesmen trying to sell you, if you want your family to remain a good Christian family, you have to vote for this party. Yes, the cat is playing with my foot. Leave me be.
Let's also talk about the fashions. Now, maybe it's because I came into puberty in the 80s. I still love 80s chicks. Like 80s metal chicks will always do something for me. Even the older, they're older now, they're our age, but I have always got a thing for that half AC/DC shirt with the spiked hair and the way they wore their 80s metal chicks are my thing, man.
Well, you enjoy that.
That's not yours, apparently.
Not mine. No, it really wasn't. I don't think I discovered Mike. Because to be honest, the 80s, the other end of that, the 80s country club chick, the 80s preppy chick, that's not really my thing either. They're all too shallow and vapid, and they're not really my thing.
I've just always had the 80s metal chick or a punk rock chick. I've always just been, yeah.
Yeah, no, my chicks didn't come around until the 90s.
Oh, well, all right.
But nonetheless.
We'll talk about that next week.
Exactly. But yeah, fashions, again, you had the two diametric deals. You had the punks you had with the beginning of the gigantic Liberty spikes. Punk as a fashion statement. Rather than a political movement. And then you had the other end, where you had to have the right fashion, belong to the right club, have the right suit. It was that upscale, uptight, hello, Buffy type, you know, oh, Boffo, it's so good to see you out here on the golf course. Oh, look at those pants you're wearing.
I don't think you could have sounded whiter, you know, if you'd actually made yourself albino.
You'd be surprised. But it was that side. And then you always have the guys in the middle. I mean, farmers have been farmers for as long as farming's been around. You know, Carhartts and camo will always be a fashion statement in the middle of the country. But on the extremes, you had these two diametrically opposed poles of, you know, oh good God, look at what she's done with her hair. Oh, that was a mistake, you know.
Well, you've also got the economic differences. I don't think there was ever a bigger economic divide. Well, maybe right now.
I was going to say there is now, but
prior to maybe 2010, I don't think there was ever a bigger economic divide between the rich and the poor.
Right.
Than in the 80s. Part of that was due to, like we brought up, the credit card culture, the just charge it.
Yep.
Because everybody was willing to go in debt to have what they wanted now.
Because not the world thinking was going about the.
But also the fact that you saw in 1988, the average CEO was making only 30 times what the average worker on the line was. By the early 90s, that had jumped from 30 times to 170 times.
And
this is where it was the late 80s where you started to see, I'm the CEO. I deserve way more than you. Not just a little bit more. I deserve it all.
Yeah. I deserve all of it. Give me all the monies.
So that's where you started to see that financial divide come in.
Right. This was, yeah, the financial gap, as they call it, and the beginning of the death of the middle class.
Yeah, it stopped being the middle class and started being upper, lower class.
Right.
Is what we became.
Right.
That's what my parents always were. We were always classified as middle class, and I'm going, really? This is middle class? No. We are low class. We're just the upper end of low class.
See, and I was on the other side of that. Again, just my family was fortunate. I've been upper class.
I remember having to scrounge couch cushions to be able to buy the new X-Men that week. You know, we did not have that kind of shit.
Right. But yeah, on the opposite end of that too, you know, there are pressures to that as well.
Like?
Well, like you have to be perfect. Like you have to be seen in the right thing, date the right people, go to the right schools, belong to the right clubs, choose the right profession.
Fuck that.
Well, look at me now. You coming from a family full of doctors and nurses and everything like that, and nurses who became nurses in order to find rich doctors. Here I am making a living counting things and talking into microphones or writing sex columns.
And see, to me, that's, you know, my dad was a pipe fitter. My mom worked at various department stores. You know, to me, all this is, you know, writing for Hustler is a huge step up from where my parents were. You know, some people might not see that, but I do.
No, I understand that completely. So, but yeah, the 80s was the birth of all of this. The 80s was really the birth of the class divide.
I also think the 80s was obviously not the first to do this, but the first time where it started becoming commercialized to do this, the looking back and selling out of the previous era. Remember the Rockin' Tunes of the 70s CD compilation, only $59.95, no CODs.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't see that shit. You know, you didn't see this stuff in the 70s, you know, that hey, get all the classic hits of the 60s on 3 LPs. Well, no, you didn't. This was an 80s commercialism. We're commercializing the past.
Well, in the 80s, you want to talk about commercializing the past, you saw the rebirth of what Americans thought was the perfect time in America, the 50s. The 50s made a huge comeback in the 80s.
Yes, they did.
Huge comeback.
Yeah, and that's also kind of goes into that whole Republican thing we were talking about, how the Republicans are always, we need to bring back 1950s values. 1950s were so prosperous. Yeah, if you were white and Christian and right. Male, it was.
Yes.
For everybody else, the 50s were not this cakewalk that you seem to be imagining it was.
And the other thing that I like to do is like, fine, go back to 1950s wages.
Yeah.
whoa, you're crazy now, you know.
Well, and just the commercialization of everything
right.
got out there. I mean, you couldn't have anything that was a fringe movement without someone at an ad agency going, I can use this.
Exactly.
Such as like the skater culture, the skateboard culture that got really big in the 80s, which I was part of.
Oh, yeah.
And it was very much, it had kind of punk ideals that, you know, we have our own fashions, you know, whatnot. We were not going to be part of your corporate world. Well, we're all shopping at the same skater stores, so there's the ironic part of that. But then you saw some hipster going, these skaters love Mountain Dew.
Yeah,
we're gonna get. We'll have Mountain Dew skaters in the commercials, and it went mainstream because they commercialized it. Yep. And I know how hipster this makes me sound, but when you commercialize something like that, it gets watered down and it does lose the luster of what it had. You've tainted it.
Another subculture that rose in the 80s. We had a Ron John surf shop in Indianapolis, Indiana.
You got beaches? So
no. Do you know where the nearest place to surf to Indianapolis was?
There's got to be a beach close to it. I'm not familiar with the area, so.
East Coast.
You know, it's like, I don't know.
Multiple states away. But we had a Ron John surf shop because somebody went, you know what? People think surfing is kind of cool, and look at this Ocean Pacific stuff. It's selling everywhere. Meh, let's go. And you even had you had the rise of cartoons. Rude Dog and the Dweebs.
Yep.
You know, Rude Dog was
Buzz McKenzie had his own cartoon for a while. Well, that's the other thing we should talk about. It goes right into commercialization.
Yeah.
Cartoons. In 1984, Ronald Reagan deregulated the part of the FCC that said you could not basically create an ad to sell to kids.
Right.
Well, let's just say that when He-Man hit the road, that all changed.
Right.
He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, I don't like calling it a 30-minute cartoon because it wasn't, but it was only made because they could sell the toys as well. And that's something you did not see in the 70s cartoons. We're about trying to sell you something during the commercial.
Right.
Not the show itself
right.
selling you something.
But He-Man, G.I. Joe, Transformers, all of that stuff. The media in general, even during the show, was trying to sell you something. Not just cartoons, but plenty of other, you know.
Even an ideal. Even if they were trying to sell you an idea of a way to look at something. And then the advertisers would cater to that.
Yes.
So it was all commercialized. I think the commercialization was worse in the 90s, but since we're talking about the 80s, worse in the 80s than it ever was in the 60s or 70s.
Yes.
Because you saw everything being commercialized out. including, like I brought up before, the punk rock movement.
Yes.
It became about fashion. It became about selling hair gel and not about selling ideas.
Exactly.
And I blame the 80s for that.
Yeah.
I truly do.
Yeah.
You also had the rise of, well, I mean, you know, to touch on movies, the slasher movie, I mean, technically was born in the 70s. It hit its stride in the 80s.
See, that I think was also born out of the Cold War. That feeling of hope, there's always that killer ready there lurking.
Just ready to stab you with a knife when you don't.
Ready to hit you with a thermonuclear bomb.
And whether they intended it or not, it had a sexual connotation to it by the whole fact of just the way these movies fell into their same tropes. The slut, first one to die. The guy who sleeps with all the women, first one to die. Right as the AIDS crisis is gearing up. Yep. That's an unintended consequence of that.
Right.
Because most of the creators admit they never planned any of that shit of being you know, a treatise on AIDS and safe sex.
Yeah.
No, it just kind of society and the movies coalesced.
But the simple fact is, if you use a condom, Jason will not kill you.
No, Jason will kill everybody.
Oh, okay.
Hell, 1986, Friday the 13th, Part 6. There's no nudity in that. It's the only one of the Friday the 13th movies with no sex in it.
That's why I've never seen it.
It's the best one, by the way. No, it is.
I believe Tom
McLaughlin hit that one out of the fucking park.
Yeah.
Alice Cooper soundtrack is fucking great. So I like the 80s. It's my favorite decade. I know yours is probably going to be 90s.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that edges out the 80s.
Yeah, it does.
But Do you understand why I love the 80s so much?
Yes. Yes, I've seen the MTV series.
Shut up. And it was VH1, by the way.
Who cares?
But do you understand why that is my favorite decade when it comes to movies, pop culture, women, music? Yeah, I'll go 70s music. But do you see why that's my favorite decade overall?
Yeah.
Do you think that... Do you think that the 80s deserve to be remembered as the joke that pop culture seems to remember them as today?
I think the 80s will be remembered as a joke for another couple of years, and then they'll come
back. You think it'll be as finally remembered 20, as like the way Brad and I look at the 70s?
2020, you're going to see a resurgence of the 80s, and you're going to see them finally getting the respect they deserve. Because I'll be honest, there's a lot of stuff that happened in the 80s that couldn't have happened at any other time, and... thank God it did. And it, because without the 80s happening the way they did, I would never have the 90s. And millennials, without the 90s, you wouldn't have had you.
And see, that one comic strip that a fan made about me is dead on. I hate you, 90s. If it hadn't have been for you, it would have continued to be the 80s.
Thank God it didn't.
Well, and, you know, we'll talk...
Because can you imagine the amount of debt this country would be in now? It would be in the trillion... Oh, damn it.
Kind of shot your own argument in the foot there.
Yeah, I did, didn't I?
Yeah. Eight years of Bush and 4 years of another Bush and 8 years of Reagan. Yeah, that argument doesn't hold water.
But the 80s were an interesting time. They were a time when, you know, it ended with the fall of communism. It ended with the falling of the Iron Curtain.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
And... that's how the 80s ended. It started with absolutely no hope and ended
rejuvenated
with nothing to lose. We were going full steam into the 90s, and that's the way it was going to be, and we were going to be on top. We had won with the Soviet Union. We discovered their smokescreen. And we've shut down Checkpoint Charlie, and my God, it's nothing but happy-go-lucky future as far as we go. So it was a turnaround decade. It really was. And I can see why you like it so much.
All right. Well, since we're running out of time, you want to tell people about Set Phasers to Sex real quick?
Yeah, it's my sex column at geekjuicemedia.com. Just go there, read the articles. You can send me a question.
Anonymously if you want.
Anonymously if you'd like. Just ask Scott a question at gmail.com. And I will use it in as it's a geek sex column. You just geek sex. You can't get better than that. You just can't.
So absolutely. There. Good night.
Good night, everybody.